Welcome to episode number one of All the Bits, a podcast about board games, the community, and the lovely, lovely bits. We are Sean and Michelle, and we hope you enjoy the show. Our first segment will be drive-bys.
Pew, 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 pew.
In which we'll discuss our recent plays and our thoughts on them.
My first drive-by is Colbert and the Great Card Game by, I don't know the designer.
A dude?
Or the publisher.
The original Colbert was, I think, by Kramer.
Oh, yeah. Kramer and Keasley.
Yeah.
So I believe this one is as well.
Okay.
And is it Stronghold that published it?
I believe so. Okay. I'll take, if we're wrong about all this, we'll take it on post.
Okay. So, this was a game that you brought to my attention, and I quite like it. I didn't really enjoy it the first few plays.
Mm-hmm.
The two-player, it kind of seemed like some of the stacks of cards weren't moving very much, and you didn't see a lot of what the game had to offer. But I really enjoyed the hand management aspect of it with the ones and twos. So basically it's a worker placement game, but it's cards, and your workers are your cards, numbered 1 to 5. And you have to go on a spot starting with a 1 and then a 2 and then a 3. So you're managing your hands and make sure that you have the numbers that you need to go on a spot. And you're building up trains, getting carts, getting coal, and then shipping it off. Like pretty standard stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I really like it.
Have you played it with more than two?
I have, yeah. I just played it with three.
Okay.
Yeah, I thought it was better. We definitely went through the endgame cards a lot more, and some of the special, there's this one stack, or worker spot, I guess you would call it, where basically get a card that gives you an extra action.
Mm-hmm.
And again, at two player, if there wasn't a good one on top, it never got taken. But I found at three players it did, and we ended up going through that deck as well, so it was a lot more interesting. And I ended up winning with a lot less shipments, but a ton of endgame scoring, which is always interesting, right? Like, it's good to know that that's an option.
So I'm glad you've come around.
Yeah.
Another thing about me being right, so this will be a frequent thing on this podcast.
I think it will be, though.
No, it will. I'll be right all the time, and, you know, we'll get into that, I'm sure, as we go on.
I think so.
All right.
Well, what about you?
Well, the first thing, two things, I'm cheating, and in our beta and alpha episodes, mm-hmm. I cheated too many times. I like cheating,
mm-hmm.
So that's a thing with me. Camel cup, as you put in our outline to make sure I said it right.
It's up.
Camel up? It's or camel cup?
It's camel up. I've heard a lot of debates, it's still debated, but
I know.
I'm sure it's camel up.
Okay, camel up, the game, and then camel up cards. So in the last week and a half or 2 weeks, I've actually had the opportunity to play both of them. So it gives me a nice little way to compare and contrast. They're both designed by Stefan Bogan and distributed by my French overlords at Z-Man Games. My fellow Francophones, even though I'm not Francophone, whatever. So the one, have you played either or?
I have Camel Up.
You have Camel Up, okay.
Yeah.
So thoughts on Camel Up?
I like it. Yeah. It's really cute. I mean, it's fun to push your luck. It's fun to wager. I haven't played it a lot. I wish it got to the table more.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I thought it would be very easy to get non-gamers to play it, but I haven't had a lot of success with it.
I definitely actually feel that way, too. I actually tried to get it yesterday again, too. We were a group of, seven, and then the one thing, just the fiddliness of it, and kind of was turned down by a few people who had played it before, and there were, three or four who were non-gamers. The card version of it doesn't come with the pyramid thing, which is the thing most people like about it.
True.
So you're basically setting the track with the cards, and then you're to race, so instead of the dice, you're using cards, and there's this, again, kind of fiddly, this 4 or 5 step thing that you do where you take 2 cards, you keep one, you show one, you take another card, you show it, put it in the deck, and then the deck is made, so there's some information that everyone knows, and then you have your 1 card, which is completely hidden, which lets you kind of manipulate things a little bit, which, in theory, I really like that.
Yeah, sounds
really... But again, the filliness. So after each leg, you have to do that. You have to redo the deck. So I find that to be, for like the small box card game, which like all these card games takes up more space than the board version of it, you have to go through this whole spiel to do it, which is a little on the annoying side.
Yeah, especially for what it's supposed to be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The one thing that introduced I liked was a fennec, which I found out was a fox. Apparently, I didn't know that. Some sort of desert nocturnal fox.
Okay.
And a palm tree. And the way it works is your camel can run into, you can, as an action, as your action, you can buy the fennec for $1. And then you place it somewhere. And if the camel hits it, it bounces back one.
Is it a bit, though?
It is a bit. Ooh. It's an actual fox. Oh, yes, it's a very nice
now
bit, too.
I'm interested.
And then the palm tree, it springboards. Yeah, so springboards it over one.
Okay.
One thing. So that's a nice, neat little thing that's not... Although I think in Camel Up, there's the sand pit, whatever.
Yeah, you have
there's
tiles, those tiles you can place down.
But this is actual bits.
That's nice.
Yeah, and they're decent bits.
Touch. I'll have to look that.
It feels like there's definitely more strategy in the card game.
Okay.
Which is nice. But I think I probably still prefer Camel Cup. Camel Cup also plays 8. But I still, even though it definitely feels more of like a game, the card version, I still like Camel. I feel like Camel Cup. I think the difference is the pyramid for me.
Yeah. Hey, it's a bit. I get it.
Yeah. And it's a fun thing. And I've had lots of good experiences with Camel Cup. Or Camel Up. Whatever. That Camel game.
I know. I think it's listed as Camel Up on BGG.
Can I just say the Camel Humping game?
Sure.
That's what they do in the end.
Sure,
just on
like
top
that.
Of each other.
Yeah.
Does that work?
That works.
Sure.
That works.
Don't let children hear this. Whatever.
Yeah.
Okay, what's your next drive-by?
My next drive-by is Unlock Squeak and Sausage by Space Cowboys.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've, just to give you some background, I have played the Exit games. I played one, actually. The Abandoned Cabin. So this was my second foray into the whole escape room series. I love escape rooms. I love puzzles. I did not enjoy Unlock.
Really?
Yes. And it's interesting because the reasons I don't enjoy Unlock are a lot of the reasons people say they like it. So one of the things people say is it's really streamlined. And I didn't find it streamlined at all. I actually found it easier to get into Exit. There were a few times where I just felt like I was wondering if I was understanding the game system correctly. Like, so there's blue cards and red cards that go together, and then there's green cards and yellow cards, and there's all this card coding, and you're never quite sure what you're supposed to do. Like, I felt in Exit, the puzzles were more difficult, but you knew what you were trying to solve, whereas I felt like I spent more time in Unlock trying to figure out if I was playing the game correctly and thinking about it correctly. And I found that quite frustrating, actually. So that's pretty much why I didn't like it. Now, I will play another one, for sure, like, without a doubt. And I have a feeling I might enjoy the second one better, but I don't know. I just didn't enjoy it. Like, I was actually frustrated at the end and in a bad mood after it all. Like, I was like, I need to take my mind off of this. Yeah, so I loved the art. I loved that it had an app. I mean, there were a lot of things going for it, but yeah, it was not a good experience, and I definitely preferred Exit over it. And I've got another Exit one, so I'm looking forward to
that. That's good.
Yeah.
So, I told you this when I kind of played this one first and then gave it to you, and the I, in general, preferred the Unlock ones. I think I seem to be, like, most people seem like they like both, except you, obviously, mm-hmm. so, again, mm-hmm. that, you know, whatever, but most people seem like they enjoy both, but seem to enjoy the Exit puzzles a little bit more, whereas me, I was just taken in by the art a little bit more for this. I do kind of agree with the streamline thing. I think the first time, I've played two of them now, and both times I felt like I had to do even though they were like a week apart, I felt like I had to do the tutorial to kind of get the whole...
To remember
the whole puzzle thing. My other issue I have with the Unlock games is, you know, you have the deck of cards and you go through them, and, you know, as you're solving puzzles or clues, you get more and more cards to do it. But sometimes there's like numbers of certain cards you're supposed to get.
Mm-hmm.
And I have such a bad time finding them and locating them on the car. And that was where I really struggled, actually, with it. Just because I found, I don't know, I think that's my own personal thing, but I just had trouble picking out the numbers. Whereas I never really experienced anything like that with Exit, where I had trouble picking up on the car. Not right. so much the puzzle, but, okay. like, something you're but supposed to see. On, yeah, which is usually just a number or a letter or whatever.
Right, right.
I, for whatever reason, I just totally struggled with that, like, making out the number. So I okay. can't imagine. That must be actually super hard for someone who has vision issues.
Yeah, it would be, actually. Yeah, that's a good point. Did you beat Unlock?
Well, beat, but whatever, you know.
Yeah, we got 0 stars.
Yeah, I think we got very few. We used a lot of clues.
A lot of clues. Too,
yeah, and most of them were my fault, because again, I didn't see those numbers.
And that was so actually bringing up the clues. Stuff. That was another thing I remember being frustrated.
Yeah.
Just because you would use a hint, and you know you're getting dinged against your time or your score, and then they tell you something you already know.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, come on, you know? And so, I mean, there's no way around it. I mean, you know, there's no way that I can think of anyways. So I get why that happens, but again, I don't know. It's just frustrating for me.
Definitely prefer the way the hints are done in Exit.
Yeah,
with the cards and stuff. Because I won't lie, like, for a bunch of them, we just kind of looked at it to be like, yeah, okay, we're right.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh,
like, wow. We did, like, if you were like, we think this is right.
You are a cheater.
Oh, yeah, totally. Yeah, yeah.
Interesting. Yeah. Actually, towards the end, I cheated. There was, for some reason, there's a spatial reasoning puzzle that we just couldn't quite get around. And by that point, I was just too frustrated to take the time. So I was like, just look through the numbers. And I was like, it's this one. And then we retroactively went back and said, okay, well, how does this work? So we still solved it. But yeah, I was just like too frustrated. So I kind of cheated too.
Welcome to the club.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. What's your next one?
My next drive-by
is
Welcome to the Dungeon by a Japanese designer, Masato Yusuji. I apologize to any Japanese people if I'm mispronouncing names. It's a yellow game. Have you ever played this?
I have.
You have? Mm-hmm. It's such a fun, quick game and filler game that you could just kind of pull out and do with. I played both of them, and it's just a really fun, neat game. It's like, it's a push your luck game, so you have your, you know, you're going into a dungeon, and you know, you have your the character's whole thing, their equipment and whatnot, and then your cards, I think, are 1 to 9 or 2 to 9, whatever they are. 9's the dragon, that's all I ever remember. And then you have to kind of keep putting the card down. At some point, someone passes, and then that person has all their HP there out there, and they go into the dungeon and fight whatever they're fighting in the dungeon. I don't know. Probably something. Trying to survive the dungeon. And each time you have the option of taking away one of the pieces of equipment with your card. So there's definitely, it's not just a push your luck game. There's definitely some strategy there where you can like, oh, you know, if I know that the dragon's in there, well, I'm going to take, there's one of the cards, lets you defeat the dragon automatically. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to take that piece away and then pass the next turn because they're going to get hit with 9 damage. So I just, yeah, I hadn't played it in a while, and I played it the other night, and I hadn't played it in about probably 6 months, and I just really like it. I'm a huge fan of it. It's just such a nice, quick game that anyone can play, and it's just, there's definitely a certain thrill to it, like any kind of push your luck game. Mm-hmm. There's definitely something, but there's something a little special about this one. I don't know. I just really like it.
I enjoyed it as well. I think we ended up playing a bunch of times, and then I was like, okay, I'm good. Like, it was already stale after a few plays, but I could see, I mean, considering how large my collection is, you know, it's not like games hit the table every week anyway. Some do, but very rare. Or very few do. So, yeah, I actually saw it on Kijiji the other day, and I was debating picking it up, but I ended up passing. Although now I want it again.
Because I started talking about.
I would like to try it again. I only tried it with 2 as well, which I think is a little less interesting.
It's definitely with 2. Yeah. I played it with 2 the other night, actually, and I'm not. Like, I've played it with, however, 3 and 4 and whatever. It's definitely a lot more. Actually, 4 I actually didn't really like it. 3 is a nice sweet spot, I found.
That's interesting.
With it.
I wouldn't have expected that.
Well, this isn't an expert opinion. This is just, yeah, it no, felt I better know. With I three. I have like, no basis behind
seems
it.
Seems like a game that would do better with more, I don't know.
Just it probably does. I don't know. Whatever. Let's drive by again. Another pew-pew.
Pew-pew-pew.
Pew.
I am going to talk about Isle of Skye.
Yay.
Which is an Alexander Pfister Mayfair release from, let's see here, 2015. I played this when it first came out and I did not like it. And I wanted to try it again just because, you know, it's been a few years. And I tried it at three players and I really enjoyed it. And yeah.
I think when we played it, that first thing was like five, right?
Yeah.
Does it even play five? Or is it close to five?
Yeah. It might play more. Dope, 2 to 5.
2 to 5, yeah.
So, yeah. So the concept of the game is it's kind of like Carcassonne. You're building up a tableau of tiles in front of you, and there are scoring tiles for each round that basically dictate what you'll get points for. So, you know, you'll get points for example, having cows connected via roads to your castle, or having enclosed areas, or having certain types of buildings. And so, what you're doing is you're drawing three tiles every round, laying them out in front of you, and then basically pricing them out. And everybody reveals their prices, and one of each person's tiles gets axed out of the game. And then you basically go around the table, and everybody has the option to buy the tiles off of you. If they don't buy the tiles off of you, you have to buy them yourself. So there's this interesting conundrum, I guess, of, you know, I don't want to spend too much money on this tile, but I want to price it right to either keep it for myself or to have people buy it. And then you, once everybody buys, you put them into your tableau, and then you score. And there's six rounds or something. And yeah, I really liked it at three. The reason I didn't like it at five was because you do need to pay attention to other people's
tableaus.
I know.
So overrated.
And it's kind of like, it's a little bit fiddly, because if you think about it, I mean, with five players, that would be 15 tiles and five different tableaus, I don't know what else to call it, that you're looking at, right? That's a lot to consider. And then on top of that, then you need to think, okay, so what should I price this at? And like, it was just, to me, that's just, it's too much. It's fiddly at that point. It's just, yeah, not fun. But at three players, you know, it's quite easy. It's manageable. And it went by super fast. And yeah, it was really enjoyable. I liked it. I wish I played more three-player games, or I wish it played better at two, because I would definitely add it to my collection. If I find it for cheap, I'll definitely buy it.
I could have went to Teeth too. You know,
oh, really?
You had it? It's not on the list.
Ah, I didn't see it. Yeah. So you own it?
Yes.
And you like it?
I do. I love it. Yeah. I'm usually not a huge, huge, huge tile placement, but I love that mechanic of, you know, kind of trying to set your prices and trying. I really love that. Same as you, like when I got it, when we played it at five, I really didn't enjoy it that much, and I probably didn't touch it I didn't buy it. I didn't even look into it for another 6 months, and then I just happened to play it. I think it was at three, actually.
Okay.
And really liked it, and then I played it like right after four. Twice. I played it like three times in one day and just loved it. Loved the heck out of it. So I, yeah, picked it up a while ago and played it. I've never played it at two, just because I feel like I heard it's not that good at two.
I've heard that as well. Yeah. Which makes sense. I mean,
yeah.
Yeah.
So it's definitely, yeah, definitely one of my go-to.
And did it win this? It was nominated for Kenner Spiel,
yeah.
Right?
Didn't he win 2 years in a row or no? Because he won with Broom Service. Look it up. Google it. I will talk about another Andrew Pfister game while you're doing that. So I finally got to play Great Western Trail, which I'm obviously way, way behind the ball on, apparently. But I really enjoyed it. Oh my gosh, I loved it. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. I loved it so much. And my favorite thing, and one of the guys I was playing with, I hadn't heard this before, but maybe it's been out there, but basically called it a roll-a-move game without dice. Just because you're basically just going around and around and around with your dude. And it really is. Like, that's pretty much what you're doing. You're changing the way you're going. But I feel like once you hit on a strategy, you're just doing that. But, I mean, it's got that. So what Great Western Trail is, as I'm sure everyone knows, but whatever, we'll talk about it. is that it's... There are kind of two things going on here. There's the worker placement aspect, where your dew is going on tiles that have been built or pre-existing ones from the start of the game. And then you have your train, kind of at the top, that's going, you know, from city to city, and you're trying to, I don't know, Kansas City to San Francisco, and you're delivering cattle during it. So your dew goes, you can only go cardboard to cardboard, though, so there's nothing on the board itself for you to go on. There's just buildings
right.
that have been built. So it starts with three or four or whatever, and then there's one of the spots is you can build your own buildings, and everyone has their own buildings that are worth victory points. Or a nice mechanic is that you have to, some of the buildings, if you land on them or pass them, you have to pay the person.
Right. And they're all these buildings are connected by routes.
Yeah.
And you have to follow the routes on the
Sometimes board. You have branching ones, yeah. but like something, you know, three of us, was all four of us actually, someone was teaching it and four of us hadn't played it before.
Okay.
And right away everyone kind of picked out, okay, well, I got to put my building here that you're going to have to pay me. They locked up the spots to make sure that someone goes. But basically, so when your worker goes, he goes all the way around and he reaches Kansas City, which is at the top of the board. You go through, you deliver your cattle, which I'll get to in a second, and then your worker just goes back to the beginning. And then you do the same thing. Yeah, so that's like kind of the role of movement aspect. The other aspect is, it's basically a deck building game for your cattle. So you have your starting hand of cattle, which are valued 1 to 5, and your starting hand, the cattles are valued 1 to 5, but your starting hand are all 1s and 2s. And then you have a market, which is another tile that you can go to buy more cattle. But you need to have the right worker, which are cowboys, to buy the cattle. So the more cowboys you have, the cheaper the cattle go. So you can really afford those 4s and 5s. So you have your hand, and when you get up to Kansas City, when your dude gets up to Kansas City, you deliver your cattle, but you can only deliver unique cattle. So you can't deliver, like, two that are the same color, so two greens. You have to deliver only the unique ones count. And that gives you money, as well as lets you deliver your cattle to certain spaces. And the farther... Cities, yeah. And the farther along the track you get, the more they're potentially worth. So that's kind of the other aspect. There's also like little bump outs where you can go and score other points and get other neat little powers. You have three types of workers. So you have your cowboys, which we talked about. You have your builders, which again, the more builders you have, the better buildings you can build. And then there's engineers, which let your train go. The more engineers you have, the more spaces your train can go across the country.
And the train helps you deliver to cities cheaper.
Yes, to deliver to cities cheaper, because your train, if you, let's say you have 16 and your train's on 10, there are probably like 3 or 4 X's there, so you have to pay that much money. And money, especially at the beginning of the game, we know money's super tight.
Yeah.
Beginning, as you get to the end of the game, it's like you have a fair bit of money, because each time you deliver cattle, you're getting money for that. And then at some point, Kansas City, which is the first spaces, I believe you lose 6 victory points for going there, but you get $6.
Right.
So everyone kind of goes, figures out that, oh shoot, if I need money, I gotta go here right away. So I just really liked all the strategy involved in it, and kind of that you really are playing two different games at once. You're doing kind of that roll and move thing, and then you're getting your, you know, figuring out how you're gonna maximize your your train.
Yeah.
Maximize your train, where you're going to deliver. Like, I took the strategy of almost focusing on the bump outs to do, like,
oh,
you
really?
Can't, because other people weren't doing that. And there's some end game bonus scoring cards as well. So, like, I took, that was the difference. I actually won this game, which never happens. but I was taking those, a couple of those, no one else was taking those end game bonus cards. And because I was kind of focusing on the bump outs, I was able to, you know, get those extra points. So yeah, that was another one of those games where I was thinking after, even though I won, I was thinking after that, oh, well, I would have done this differently. I wonder what would happen if I do this. Mm. I wonder what would happen if I went really heavy on the deck building and thinning my hand and discarding cards and trying to manipulate my hand as much as possible.
Mm-hmm.
But like, what would happen if I went really heavy on, you know, the train, like getting my train all the way, because you can go all the way around the board, or
right.
this strategy or that strategy. So that's, to me, that's always a sign of like a really good game. If you walk away from it thinking, well, what can I do next time? What can I do differently?
For sure. Yeah. Yeah, I played it as well. I played it at 2, and I also really, really enjoyed it. Yeah, it's like kind of rinse and repeat and repetitive, but it's also very interesting. And it kind of reminded me, and I know it's different, but it kind of reminded me of Lords of Waterdeep as well, just in the essence of having your own buildings and getting bonuses from that and kind of having your own path. I really enjoyed that aspect of it. Yeah, I really want to play it again, actually.
I do agree about the rinse and repeat, and kind of, and I think I texted you like halfway through.
Yeah, that's being, why I'm shocked that you liked being it so much.
Like, it's definitely a slow build. Like, it's the beginning is definitely a slow build because all you're doing is like you're just going here, activating, going here, activating, going here, or some people just like zip it to Kansas City to get their money,
right,
and then go back around. But then you're really like, but you could see. You could see where, at some point, things are going to kick into high gear.
Right.
And as soon as that happened, and it was probably, I found, like, the halfway point, where it just, like, it got really good, and it got really, like, everyone was planning out different strategies and trying to figure out how to maximize points. So, and you could see that happening. So that's another good thing, is the fact that I was able to tell, okay, there's going to be a point I could tell that it's kind of monotonous now, and it's kind of, like, slogging along. But I could see in the future how this is going to become a lot more intense.
Yeah, for sure.
So that makes things good for like a 2 to 3 hour game.
Yes, like, that's important.
Yeah.
I wanted to specialize. I had to switch. I felt in that game, I remember I wanted to like specialize. It was either in I think it was in Cowboys. But I found it, I don't know, I found it hard to specialize I don't know what they were called.
Builders?
Engineers? No, like what were the Cowboys builders, engineers called? Were
dudes.
Yeah, okay. People.
They would actually be called dudes. Legitimately, they would be dudes, actually.
Yeah, Cowboys. I was like, oh, I'll get really strong in Cowboys and just buy, like, really cheap cattle and, you know, have a really strong deck. But I just found that even at the end of the game, I didn't have a lot of dudes.
Okay. Well, there's also a certain amount of luck, right? Because each time you go to Kansas City, you're putting new guys on. Mm-hmm. And when you buy your, when you go to the worker buying tile, you pay whatever space they're on. So they could be on, you know, $9 or 9 cents, or they could be on $6 or $6.
Right.
So there's definitely a certain amount. Like, at the beginning of the game, I really wanted cattle, but I Cowboys to buy the cattle, but I had no money. I didn't have any money, and they were, when they did show up, they were showing up on the expensive thing that I couldn't afford.
Right.
Because you have to pay. So there's definitely a little bit of luck because you're just drawing them from a bag.
There's luck as well with the deck. I mean, it's a deck of cards.
Yeah.
You know, you're doing your best to build the deck as much as possible. But at the end of the day, if you can't get what you need, like I know I've heard, I would say, you know, 9 out of 10 of the reviews are very positive. But the few times I've heard people talk negatively about the game, it is just because, you know, you can build a really great deck, but you can just have one bad run or two bad runs where you just, your deck just doesn't work with you. And no matter what you do, you know, it doesn't pay off. And now you're behind and you can't come back. And it's a 2 hour game. It's not a, you know, 30 minute game. So I could see that.
I definitely found with the deck, at least my strategy, I'm a huge deck builder guy. I love playing deck builders. And I definitely found that, like, I just wanted to thin the crap out of my deck. Like, as soon as I could, I undid both of the things that lets you discard. So, like, I got rid of, like, all those ones, and I started getting rid of twos. And then I got rid of both that let you draw and discard cards. So I was just, like, cycling through. Like, it would take me, like, I would just be landing on my buildings or the gray buildings or whatever, or other people's buildings that let me just cycle to make sure I have a hand when I get there that I can get to San Francisco to get my 9 points or that I can get to whatever the one before San Francisco was.
Did you ever find that you were too high? Like, if you were constantly cycling through your deck and getting the best, when you finally came to Kansas City, did you find that you were delivering too high? Because that was another aspect of the game I really, really liked. It's not always, you know, I mean, you can go, I think you can go backwards.
Yes.
Number.
Yes, you can go. Yeah. At least that's how
it works. But I thought it was pretty interesting how you can only deliver to each city once.
Yes.
And each city has a number associated with it. And that's the total of your cattle.
And that's what you could do. Yeah.
And so, you know, you can't just, with the same deck, keep delivering a 6 or an 8 or whatever.
Nice thing is you can kind of think that, well, this is what's in my deck. And it's such a small deck, right? So you could kind of think of, okay, this is what's left here. So this is how I'm going to make it work to do it, which is kind of what I was able to do, which is, again, shocking because I never put that much thought into games or
that's
anything.
Good.
So that, again, that's how you know I enjoy the game.
Yeah, no kidding.
Okay, that was a bit long for a drive-by.
That was a lot, yeah.
That was more like drive and stop.
No, it was like, drive-in movie.
It was like a drive-in movie, yeah. So there won't be any pew-pew-pew-pew for that. No,
no, that's a bit of a snore, so yeah. I guess. Okay, so my next one is Montanai. Oh, by the way, just to cycle back here, Isle of Skye won the 2006 Tenorspiel.
Okay.
Yeah.
So he did win 2 years in a row, right?
He did, and then, yeah.
Is Great Western Trail? No, Great Western Trail is not nominated.
Suggested, recommended, and people think it's because he won too many times.
Too much.
But. Okay,
poor
so.
Sorry.
Montanai, Carl Chudik as Matty Games. Mm-hmm. I love card games. Mm-hmm. I love the Dukes of Dice podcast. And they talk about this game a lot. Mike Fitzgerald, I believe, introduced it to them. And it's Mike Fitzgerald, who's the designer of Diamonds. And the Jack the Ripper trick-taking series.
I love those.
The Rummy ones.
Yeah, I love those. Those are so good.
He's like, this is the best game ever designed. So I have not heard good things, but I really wanted to check it out.
Yeah.
And I sat down with Rich and I had my husband and I had a very serious conversation. And I said, honey, I want to get this game, but I need you to commit with me because it's going to take a few games we know we like it.
And then you're like, if you don't do it, I'll divorce you.
That's right. So. Well, yeah, I put that on the line, of course. Yeah. So we've only played, two games so far, I believe. So we're still in that what is happening phase, and I'm perfectly okay with that. I see the potential, and I have no idea how to play it. Like, it's just, you need to have everything lined up right. I feel like that's the case. Yeah, like, you just have to have everything lined up right so you can get these powerful moves. But I just, like, I can't seem to get there. Like, what kept happening to us is on our turns, we'd be like, okay, I'm going to, no, like, you're one card away or you're one thing away from being able to do what you wanted to do. So, so we played terribly and it took long. But I'm really excited to keep exploring it. I'm committed. I've committed myself to Montanai because I think it would be really fantastic to have a deep game that is small and compact and plays in 20 minutes I enjoy.
That you don't have to pay $1 million for, like, Glory to Rome.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. So I just think it would be nice. Like, if we can get to that point with it, it can be one of those games like, oh, let's pull it out. We've got 20 minutes. Or, you know, let's go grab a coffee and play it. Like, I would love to have a game like that. So that's my commitment to Montanai. Yeah, we'll see. We'll see if we get there. We're not there yet.
It's going to become a lifestyle game for
you. Yeah. It's a commitment.
For some people, it's like Magic the Gathering or, you know, Star Wars Destiny. But for you,
it's Montanai. And there's an expansion coming out. Which, you know, maybe in 5 years I'll be ready for it.
There you go.
Yeah.
I like that you're looking to the future.
Yes,
important.
Looking to the future. So have you played it?
No, I have sat by a few games of Glory to Rome. So is Montanai like the spiritual successor?
Yeah,
or like,
yeah, pretty much.
To it, from what I've heard, I mean, it's always kind of interested me, but I figured I would never have anyone to play with,
You need the commitment. I went on Twitter and I was like, okay, you guys, like, what? I'm going to pick this game up. Give me your top tips. And everyone was basically that. Only play it at two player and play more than a few games. Like, you need, and with the same person, like, you need to have that commitment. Otherwise you're not going to like the game. It's just going to feel like a chaotic mess, which is exactly what it felt like.
There you go.
Two words to describe my first play of Montanai. Chaotic mess.
There you go. Much like this podcast.
Yes, very much. Well, and it's funny because the rule book actually says on page 2, like, just be forewarned that this is going to be very complex and, you know, confusing, and that's okay. Basically, and I'm like, you know, if a rule book has to call that out, yeah,
you know,
at least it knows what it is.
That's true, actually. I give some sort of props for that.
Some honesty,
yeah, honesty's pretty cool.
Yep.
Okay, well, the last thing that I want to talk about, my last drive-by, and it's gonna be very quick.
Pew 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 pew.
It's gonna be very quick just because it's some foreshadowing. I'm very much into foreshadowing.
Ooh.
Is I played Eldritch Horror. Everyone knows about Eldritch Horror, so I'm probably not gonna get into it very much. However, when I did play with it for the first time, I played with my Terror Tome, Stillmire, Treasure Chest bits.
Bits, 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 bits.
All right. So is this going to be a thing every time I say bits you're going to sing?
I don't know. I think that's a bit much.
We'll see. Okay. Well, so I did play it. Obviously, it's an amazing game, and I don't play it nearly as much as I want to play Eldritch Horror. I would love to play it regularly. I enjoy it so much. I enjoy the whole storytelling. I like making voices when I'm reading the cards. I like doing crazy things when I'm, like, really getting into it and really kind of role-playing it a little bit. It's a super fun, game, but the bits definitely added something to it, so we'll get to that later on, foreshadowing. Woo-woo-woo-woo! So, our next segment will be the BGG Spotlight. So what we thought we would do here is each episode spotlight a different BGG thread. There's so much amazing content on BoardGameGeek, and a lot of it just you might not see because you're not in you just go to the main board, or you don't go to a certain board or whatever. And so this one, the one we're going to do today, I believe, comes from the Dice Tower Guild thing. And what's it called, Michelle?
You might be a Eurogamer if... ...
All right. So what we're going to do is just talk about some of the different posts in the thread. And, we hope it always won't be for comedic value. This one is definitely for comedic value, because we thought it would be nice to have something a little funny for our first episode here. But, sometimes we hope that we get ones that are maybe moving.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe touching. Maybe ones that really ask a hard question. Who knows? I'm sure I will pick a lot
of... one knows.
No one knows.
At this point.
We don't know yet. We don't even know if there'll be another episode of this.
That's right.
Whatever. All right. You can get started, Michelle.
Okay. So my first one is from Nat Morris. If you stare at the board trying to decide what to do until your eyes bleed, and then go ahead and take the wood anyways, which was what you thought you should probably do in the first place, and then you might be playing a Euro. Isn't that the truth?
Yeah. All right, the next one is courtesy of Matthew Clark. If it all comes down to a thrilling, breathless, desperate 10-minute calculation of final victory point totals, it might be a Euro game.
So true, and so good. So good. I love that. Love pulling out the score pad.
This is more foreshadowing to our hot topic when we talk about who we are.
That's true.
And why we're doing this. Remember, foreshadowing.
Apparently,
people.
Apparently, I like even score pads.
Yeah.
Oh, dear. All right, the next one is, if you yawn when you look at the box cover, then it's probably a Euro game. If you yawn when you look at all the components on the table, then it's probably a Euro game, unless you're me. If you yawn as you listen to the rules explanation, then it's probably a Euro game. If your head explodes in wondrous delight as you piece all the moving parts together, then it's probably a Euro game. If you yawn when you tally up the score to see who won, it's probably a Euro game. And that's courtesy of Chad Ackerman.
If you yawn while you're listening to this fake radio show, it's probably the All the Bits podcast.
Oh, dear. That was a little long. But, when I read this, I just laughed out loud because I feel like this explains my first Feld experience. And Stefan Feld is my favorite designer.
Foreshadowing.
And it kind of sounds also boring. And you're like, what is going on? And then it happens and it's beautiful. And
All right. If the most thematic aspect of the game is that victory points are actually called prestige or fame, it might be a Euro. That was from Michael Gonzalez.
And that is also extremely true.
It really is.
Yes.
These are all really funny because they're really true.
That's right. This is spot on as well. And this is, again, from Matthew Clark. This is his second on the list. If there's traitors and not traitors, it might be a Euro game.
Mm-hmm. And this was Matthew Clark's thread.
So, yes. Okay.
So
Well, thank you, Matthew Clark.
I like how we're talking about Matthew Clark. We know him. But... So he obviously had a lot of pent up things to say about Euro games.
Well, he did a very good job. Lot of fun reading this thread. All right, what's next? What do you have next?
So it might be a Euro game if the person describing the game forgets to mention the theme or setting and only describes the innovative game mechanics.
Yeah, I do that actually.
Yes, you do. I was going to say, this is Michelle.
Right, there's a theme around this. I don't care about the theme, I care about the mechanisms.
And that was from Brian Thunkt.
Well done on that last name.
I don't know if that's it, but sorry, Brian.
Yes. All right, Mark Rouser has this to say. It might be a Euro game if there's a surly man staring at you with his arms folded on the cover of the box. So many surly men. So many.
That really is amazing. That's so true.
Yes, it is. You think that would be one area where they could be a little bit more creative?
I almost feel like they know at this point, and they're just like, yes, whatever. Let's do it.
Yeah.
I think there's like, they get together, all the Euro game designers, and they're just like, let's just troll everyone.
That's right.
Let's just do this.
Let's just do this.
We have our own Eurogame meme, and it's the surly guy folding his arms, looking at us very sternly. All right, and the final one, which I wanted to just include on here as the last thing, is if you read a thread about Eurogame jokes and you can't see why these statements are funny, you might be a Eurogamer. And that was
That's
for
cute.
Matt Balls.
Nice.
Bowls. Sorry, Matt.
Bowels, maybe?
Bowels. Perhaps. Poor guy. Yeah. Bowels.
Yeah.
So our next segment is our namesake, and it's the All the Bits.
Bits.
Segment. So the All the Bits segment.
Bits.
I was looking at Michelle trying to get her to sing every time I say bits.
You know you have to pay me for this, right? Bits.
There you go. I like that you responded to me looking at you expectantly to sing. And here we would talk about, and again, more foreshadowing, but here we're going to talk about the bits or the components of certain games that we are really into at any given moment.
We appreciate it.
We are both very, very big fans of bits.
Good bits. Good bits matter.
Yes,
I actually have that tattooed on my back. No,
do you? Really? No. I could see you doing that. Also, I also could see you having like a tattoo on your like, the small of your back with a heart and butterfly and wings with that says I love Vel on it.
Maybe.
Yeah. Who, we discussed this, I sent you pictures of him. He's a fairly attractive man. He's not like...
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah.
For someone you're in love with.
I mean, he's spelled, so,
yeah,
you know.
So it doesn't really matter what he looks
That's
like.
Right.
But, you
That's
know, right. I must admit, I was a bit surprised.
What were you expecting?
I don't know. I don't know what he's expecting, but, you know, he's just... He's also younger. I thought he would be older.
Okay.
He seemed like he was younger. That took me by surprise as well.
Yeah. He's pretty prolific for his age.
Yeah, like much like
Although
me.
Although Reiner Knizia, yeah. I mean, I guess he's...
I feel like
maybe
he's old.
Maybe he just looks good for his age, because he has been around for a while. Anyways, we're getting on topic.
Okay, sorry. We apologize. Squirrel, all right.
As a rolling dice and taking names would say.
So what bits are you going to talk about, Michelle?
So the game I'm going to spotlight in all the bits segment this week, or this episode, is Gingopolis.
Oh, that sounds familiar.
Yeah. So I've been playing this a bunch. It's been one of those games I pull off the shelf every once in a while, play a bunch, and then finish playing for a bit. And the reason I wanted to spotlight it is because it has wonderful bits that are different colors. You're not typical blue, red, green, yellow. There's actually purple, pink, and black, and green, and orange. And
so many colors.
I know. And it's a tile game that reminds me of Caverna in the sense, this is probably people are going to be like, oh, what? But you're building up and you're building out. And so at the end of the game, you have these piles of tiles that are, you know, a few high, then they're nice and thick. And then there's, tiles laid out in different directions. And then there's all these beautiful colored pawns on top. And then when you construct a new tile, you know, they could have just used a little chit, but instead they use these thick, long gray cylinders. And it's a really, really nice touch. I don't know. There's just, it's one of those games that when you see it on the table, you just have to stand back and appreciate it. And I really enjoy playing it because it's a great game, but also because it really has lovely, lovely bits.
Lovely, lovely bits.
Yes. And that's my spotlight. What about yours?
All right. I'm very quietly opening up my spotlights.
Yeah.
Right now. So I mentioned before that I played Ultra Tour. And I want to spotlight some of the Stonemaier treasure chests. I have three. I have like the original one with the people, which is awesome, which is super amazing quality. I also picked up these two probably like 6 months ago, the gadget guide one, which I don't know why I bought it.
Yeah.
Because I'll get into it in a second, but I have no idea why I got it. And the Terror Tome, which I specifically got for Eldritch Horror. Mm. The Terror Tome has hearts, which are awesome.
That look like real anatomical hearts. Yeah. Yeah.
Which obviously health
is amazing.
And brains.
Yes, so for sanity.
Little whatchamacallit things that are
clue tokens,
so little magnifying glasses
which are super cute.
They are. Like, unfortunately, gold. I really wish they had like little plastic inside, but you can't hope for everything.
Yeah,
and those
really
three
nice.
Are totally for Eldritch Horror. That's the reason I bought it. And it actually was a pretty good. I got it at our local game, our FLGS, which for cheaper than actually goes for online. Which was pretty cool.
That is very cool.
It also has skulls, which seem really cool, too. They're like...
I was going to say Zolkin, but...
Those are crystal skulls. Are yeah, great. And yeah. Those are crystal skulls. These are skulls.
Right.
It's got tomes or books or something, which I'm sure there are games that this can be used for. It's got blood capsules. And
no clue.
And hatchets. So, I don't... I don't know what I would... You have a spreadsheet, right?
Like
you
I sent do. Me a spreadsheet. There is a spreadsheet in existence that has all of the different treasure chests, or whatever they're called, and all the games that you can play with them, which is great because I'm looking at some of these going, what would you use that for? But yeah, there it looks... According... I haven't spent a lot of time on the spreadsheet, mm-hmm. but it looks like there's quite a bit you could... You could use them for.
And speaking of what you would use this for, I have this gadget guide tome. This gadget guide.
No clue.
Yeah, I have no clue. I don't know why I even bought it, to be honest. It's got, like, hard drives. And I guess something in the Android universe. It's got wrenches, which I didn't know this. Wrenches.
Those are super cute.
They are very... They definitely are. Like, med packs. I don't know what this is. They look like grenades, but they're something I'm assuming computer-wise. Little hard drive things, and I don't know what these are.
Okay.
You're looking it up.
I'm looking it up.
Sweet.
Let's see. Like,
we are super profesh.
All right.
I'm just kidding. Oh, sorry for the note.
It's not in here. Treasure chest, food crate, resource vault, and energy box.
It's not the energy. You know what my problem
thematic,
was?
Thematic, adventure atlas, gadget guide. Okay, here we go. 51st state.
Nope.
Alien Frontiers, you can use the energy crystals.
I guess.
Among the Stars, same thing. Arcadia Quest, Arkham Horror, the card game. Oh, wait, that's Terror Tome. Oops.
Yeah, that must be Terror Tome.
Bang Dice Game, Ammo Bullets. Where are the Ammo Bullets?
No, that's not this one.
Isn't that a gadget guide?
Yeah, there's no...
It says
no.
Ammo Bullet.
No.
Maybe that's what those blood vials are.
That's in the Terror Tome.
Oh. Oh, maybe that's what those are. Those discs.
These?
Yeah, okay. It has...
These are Game Boys.
Damage, deflector shield, energy crystal, tech science, tool.
It's tool.
Yeah.
The wrenches are really cool.
Well, there's one of those is ammo. Believe it or not.
All right. Anyway.
Yeah.
Let's get over with this.
There looks to be quite a few that you could use it for.
Definitely know this, though, with this gadget guide one. The quality doesn't seem up to par compared to, like, the original one. And I'm just holding a few in my hand. Like, the hearts and the brains are really cool in this. But, like, even just the quality feels off in the gadget guide one.
Yeah, they're not quite as nice.
I really don't know why I have it. So I might have to sell it. I do
yeah,
like
that's a good idea.
These, though.
Yeah.
The wrenches are, the like, wrenches. Yeah, the tools are, like, metal wrench things, which are cool. Yeah. But even, like, the painting and stuff, everything just kind of looks off in the gadget one.
Yeah, I agree.
So I wish there was a little more, wish they were all the same quality, but I really enjoyed it. For me, at least, and even the guys playing, really enjoyed the fancy bits for Eldritch Horror.
I am very jealous of your Terror Tome.
Yeah.
Yes.
As you should be.
Next up!
Oh, funny, that's our next segment.
What?
Crazy! The next up segment. And this segment will basically just be talking about things that we're looking forward to, whether it be playing, or things they're releasing, or things that we want to acquire, which for Michelle will be every single game in the world.
I'm getting better.
Are you?
Slowly. Yes, I'm getting better.
Okay, it sounds like something an addict would say. Whatever. Okay, you go first.
Okay, well, my first up is Coffee Roaster. So this is a solo game from Hisashi Hayashi, I believe. Can you look that up, actually?
That's right.
And it's an import, and I spent a lot of money on it, but I'm quite excited to play it. It's basically a bag-building push-your-luck game, from what I understand. A la kind of Orléans style, with quite a bit of variability, and I'm just excited about it because I play a lot of solo games, and a lot of the time, which I prefer Euro games, and a lot of the time when I'm sitting down to play a solo game, I kind of hesitate and often get deterred by the thought of setup. Setup, fiddliness, you know, all of that stuff. So, Coffee Roaster apparently is a very quick setup and a decent play time, so I just see myself getting a ton of play out of it, considering it has a decent amount of depth. And plays, you know, a little bit heavier than, say, like Quicks or something like that. So, yeah, that's my first one. I'm quite excited about it. It's still on hold, so I don't know when it will ship. But I'm really excited about trying it out.
Cool. I'm very curious too. I'll have to live vicariously through you and then play it when you get fed up of it.
You can watch.
I can watch you play it, yeah. Because that's a little, little bit much for me to
sit in the corner. Watch
just
me play.
Look enviously at you.
Yeah. That's not weird at all.
No, not whatever.
Like a fetish thing.
Yeah, well, you should see the things I do with your dog. So
okay, that's just a little.
Well, you
little
know.
Far.
Speaking of which, where is your dog?
He's upstairs.
Oh,
he's hiding. So yeah. He doesn't make a lot of noise.
I thought he was hiding for a different reason. Like, I don't like where this podcast is going. Okay, so my leadoff hitter, you get that reference?
Oh, yeah.
My leadoff hitter, because you did the next up, which
up,
is like batter up. So my leadoff hitter is an oldie, but a goodie. I guess an oldie for the way things are.
Yes.
In board games, Pandemic Legacy, which some of us have not zoomed, have taken it very slowly in playing it, and I just got through April.
Wow.
Which was by far my favorite month so far, which is the little guys. Anyway, things happen that changed things a lot in it, and the board is drastically different now. Yeah, and it was the first time. It's like, oh my god, I want to play this again right away. And so it took us, we lost our first game in April, so we had to finish it. And it's just been a slow haul, because we played this with myself and my wife. We played this with our former neighbors when we lived at our former place. And then we moved, and then we had a baby, and then it just never worked out until like the last month, where for whatever reason, now that our baby's a little bit older and sleeping normally, where we were able to play it with them a few times. So we've played it like 4 times in the last 2 weeks or 3 weeks. However, I make a pilgrimage to the east coast of Canada every summer, so I will be doing that, and Pandemic Legacy will not be joining me. So May is gonna have to wait till like mid-August, and I'm very sad about that.
I'll be starting Season 2, and you'll be still hitting Season 1.
When does Season 2 come out?
Gen Con. August. And I think it's early August, too.
Oh, that's not going to happen.
But I don't know when it hits retail. It might be a Gen Con and then not hit retail for a little
bit.
We could just
stop playing Legacy since
stupid
Z-Man Games released a synopsis, and they're like, we kind of know what happened.
Oh,
but
really?
Whatever. Have you not read that?
No,
Oh my gosh. Or whoever released it. I don't know if it was Z-Man.
I was wondering why people kept saying spoilers.
This is annoying. It's very annoying. They released a press release or something that had the synopsis of it. And it. Anyway, whatever. I don't care. I'm so old and forgetful that I'll just forget by the end anyway.
I was gaming with someone the other night. We were talking about how did we get into games and what games, what were our gateway
foreshadowing
games.
Sorry.
And her game was Pandemic Legacy. And I was like, that must have been mind-blowing.
Yeah, totally.
You know?
Yeah, it's all downhill from there.
Ooh, yeah, how do you top that?
Yeah.
So I thought that was pretty interesting and pretty neat that someone could get into the hobby and be able to play Pandemic Legacy without much experience. I thought that was pretty neat. Cool.
All right.
What's
your two hole?
My next up. I don't know any baseball terms.
I don't know them all. We'll be good.
Ignore.
Just go with it.
Okay.
Or ignore. Fair enough.
My next up is Okie Dokie. This is a TMG release. I think it's hitting stores soon. It did a soft launch at Origins. And it is the game meets 6 Nimmt, apparently. The reason I'm really interested in it, well, I like both of those games, but it also has ridiculously cute animal art, and they're all playing instruments, and I'm a musician, and I like really great art, so I was immediately drawn to the game, and then when I found out it was cooperative and, like, the game, like, that was it for me. From what I understand, it's, like, Six Nymph in that there are a number of rows, and you need to play certain cards. I believe they have to be not sequential, but they have to go, like, ascending and be in the same color, and you don't know what each other has, and you can only say certain things. Very similar to the game. And I'm just really stoked to try it out and play it. I don't know when it comes, when it hits stores, but I assume it'll be soon, and it'll be coming to me with coffee roaster. They'll be keeping each other company.
That's nice of them.
Yeah.
Animals drinking coffee.
Yeah.
That'll be cute.
So cute. Yeah. I love the art.
The art is really cool. It's
amazing.
Totally.
Yeah.
It's definitely, I kind of want it just for the art.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's pretty amazing. What about you? What's your third hole?
Two hole. And so I just kind of added this at the last minute just because I saw it today and I wasn't aware of it.
Oh, yes.
Container, the 10th anniversary jumbo edition, which apparently, so Container's an economic, have you played Container?
I haven't. I've heard of it. Yeah. Nothing.
So it's like an economic economic game. However, the reason I'm super interested is apparently the ships are ginormous in it.
I've seen 3D renders.
They're like, I don't know, like 6 or 7 inches or something ridiculous like that. And so I was looking at the BGG section for it, and people were complaining that they're too big and ridiculous. And I was like, poppycock, nonsense. No way. So really, that's the only reason this is on here, is like giant bits.
Yeah, that sounds amazing.
Obviously, right? So I am looking forward to it because it's been pretty hard to get, and I don't have it, obviously. I've played it, but so I'm very much looking forward to it, but jumbo bits.
Is it going
to
be like $400?
I have no idea.
You know what I am appreciating? I haven't been in the hobby that long, probably 3 or 4 years, but I am noticing a trend of Euro games caring a little bit more about art and bits and things like that, you know? It's what sells, right?
So yeah. Is it more, though, because, like, American, like, for games, do you mean, like, games that are coming over, or is it just...
No, just the genre. Like,
just in general? Yeah.
I mean, it seems to me like the just the production quality is going up, and, you know, art... You know, I think before you could get away with a really ugly game, and I think you probably still could, you know, I think there's just more attention being paid to having nicer bits and, you know, putting some effort in, you know.
An effort into it?
Just cubes all the time. They're still cute. I'm okay with cubes. I know. But you know what I mean.
I'm not. So, yes, I'm very glad about that too, actually.
Yeah. And I think Container is like a great representation of that. You know, like, here's this, from what I understand, fairly heavy economic game that's getting, you know, like crazy deluxe treatment, you know. It's
jumbo.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Jumbo. Okay. Who's your I don't know what the third spot is. I don't know.
Third hitter.
Who's your third? No, third base is a position.
I told you I know nothing.
Just how are you ever going to play baseball?
Okay,
I like 24/5.
Next up. I played that game, actually.
And it's amazing.
Yeah, it was really good.
All right.
Okay, my third base. No, wait.
Third hitter.
My third hitter.
Say three spot.
My next up is Near and Far. So I kickstarted this game, and I received it a few weeks ago, and I've played the first intro game, and I really enjoyed it. I generally like Ryan Lockett's games. I don't love his games, but I find that they're just very nice to play. And I've only played the intro game, and I know that there are a few different modes to play. There's arcade mode, which is just to
pew,
play
pew,
the game.
Pew.
No. Yeah, that works. That works. Nice.
Good try.
And there's a campaign mode and a character mode, which I knew about the campaign mode. I didn't know about the character mode, and I still have to read into it. But regardless, they both sound interesting, and I'm very excited to just delve into the game and go past the intro. And the reason I bought the game was because I think building up a character over, you know, multiple games is always fun, and it's nice that it's, again, a Euro and not Shadows of Brimstone.
Are you sure you didn't buy it for the metal coins? Which you haven't received yet?
I still have not received my metal coins. I mean, that was definitely... I love metal coins, but I didn't buy it just for the metal coins. And by the way, I do like Shadows of Brimstone.
I know you do.
But it's just nice to have, you know... To
here are metal coins for you. So. No, that's actually... Here, this.
I'll take your toonies.
No, not my toonies.
No, it's not the same. Sorry. I'm actually really excited to see...
Sounds like it.
Yeah, it does sound like it. To see their... metal coins, because it's, yeah, Ryan Lockett designed them, and they look really good. Yeah.
Cool.
So that's my third base.
My
third hitter.
Let me say about my third base.
Okay.
Is an expansion, Mystic Vale, Vale of the Wild. I'm a huge Mystic Vale fan. I love Mystic Vale. This is the second expansion. I just cracked into the first expansion, which doesn't really do anything special.
More cards.
It's just more cards.
More of everything,
yeah.
I've heard.
It's just annoying because it's a lot of money for just more cards.
Yeah.
But whatever. However, reading into Veil of the Wild, so like it came out a while ago, but I didn't want to touch it until I didn't want to look into it until I've actually played with the first expansion. Now that I've kind of gone through that a couple times, Veil of the Wild, it seems like actually answers. adds a little bit more to it. It's got the concept of leaders, which gives you a little bit of direction.
Okay.
So not like leaders in Seven Wonders, but it almost gives you a strategy going forward with it. It also has, and this is something I actually really hoped for from the original game, which I found didn't have as much, but gives you more ability to support decay. So in Mystic Vale, basically it's kind of like it's a card crafting is what it is. Card crafting slash deck building, basically. But except your deck, you just keep adding to the cards on your deck with it. But it's a push your luck game at its heart. And decay is kind of like the bad stuff that happens. And you can only have four. But there's not a ton to really... There's a couple cards in the base game that negate some decay. But in Veil of the Wild, apparently there's a lot to support that mechanic. So you can... add more decay to your deck and ways around it, which I think is really cool because then it lets you look at combos and different things.
Right.
Like that.
Yeah.
So I'm definitely looking forward to getting that.
Cool.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I really enjoyed that game.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd like to play it again. We should
have lent it to you.
Again. I know, I thought about it, but I had to, like, you know.
Me and Portland.
Sean's heading out of town, so he asked me what games I wanted to borrow from his collection, and... I picked four, and Mystic Vale was on the short list, but I didn't want to, you know, have him bring over an entire car of games, so I had to be picky.
Yeah.
All right. Okay,
what's your cleanup hitter? Cleanup hitter.
My fourth base? Wait, is that a home run?
That is a home run. Who's your home run hitter?
My cleanup hitter is Hannah Mokoji.
That's a pretty small cleanup hitter.
Yeah, I know. Sweet and simple.
Yeah.
Yeah, this one's been out for a while. I've heard really great things. I looked at it, didn't really interest me, and then I kept hearing great things, so I finally sat down and watched a few reviews and watched the gameplay, and, now I'm interested in it. I play a lot of two-player games. I really like card games. It just looks really interesting. I was worried it might feel like, what was that game? Now I can't think of it. Too much deduction. I normally enjoy deduction, but I don't like games where it's just, I don't know, head-to-head.
It's very minimal, though. There's not a ton. You mean in terms of, like, the card, the four tokens?
Yeah.
Like the tokens? Yeah, I mean, it's not...
Like, I like Shot and Todd.
Yeah, it's similar. It's like that tug-of-war, right?
Yeah.
It's just a tug-of-war type thing. I love it. I'm a huge fan of it.
Yeah,
could
really?
Lend that to you, too, if you want.
Oh, I didn't know you had it.
Might not be on my list, but whatever. Yeah, the cards are too big. Usually, so when I go, I actually just recently picked this up. I ordered this, this little case that they use for Cards Against Humanity. From Amazon,
okay.
So I could just pack like card games.
I did the same
but
thing.
But those cards, the cards from this are too, yeah, they're too big. I could do it, but then I would be losing valuable real estate if
I
did that.
I completely understand.
It's
yeah.
not coming.
So I think I'm going to order it. It looks really good. And now that you say it's really good.
I really like it. The art's awesome too.
Yeah, it looks beautiful.
Yeah, I really like it. It's just, I mean, again, there's nothing, oh my God, about it, but it's a good, and it's fat. Like, it's not a long game, which is nice for that type of game. It's like this amount of cards, so two.
Yeah. Hot topic.
And welcome to our Hot Topics segment, which in this segment we'll be discussing how hot I am.
No, that's not what's happening.
No, that's exactly what's happening. So for this segment, we're going to, every so often, just pick a topic that's going on in the board game world and discuss it and give our thoughts and opinions on it. And it's at the end of the show, so if you don't like what we're saying, just click stop.
That's right.
So that'll work out perfectly, so you don't have to skip ahead or anything. But for today, we might be new to most of you, hopefully. You know, if there are like 5 of you listening, maybe like 2
well,
of
my mom.
Your mom.
So that's, she knows who I am. So
yeah,
we're
that's
4.
True. Yeah, my wife will know who I am.
Yeah, my husband. Yeah. Aw, no.
So maybe like 1 of you won't know who we are. So one of you, for you.
Just you.
Bob or Sally.
Yes.
Whichever you are, or whatever your name is. We wanted to just talk about who we are, why we're doing this podcast, and give you a little bit of background. We hope that you'll get a lot of background on us kind of as we're doing this show.
Right.
You'll get to know our personalities, if you haven't already figured it out a little bit more. But for now, we just wanted to give you some of the basics. So, Michelle, I have a question for you.
Mm-hmm.
I'll cross my legs all
yes,
serious.
Let's,
like,
let's
oh my,
do this.
I have no flexibility.
We're in interview mode.
Okay, jeez, I'm really bad at this.
Okay.
What game got you into the hobby?
Well, that's a very interesting question, Sean. The game that got me into the hobby was actually Pandemic. So my husband will never forget the day. They had a board game afternoon at their work, and a lot of people he works with, they're software developers, they play board games, and he came home and he said, "Hey, guess what? There's all these, like, weird games out there." And we'd gone to Walmart and, you know, Superstore looking for games to play. And, you know, we always came back empty-handed. And so he's like, let's try out this game called Pandemic. And he had played it in the afternoon. And so we played it, and that was it. I was hooked. Immediately hooked. We played a ton of it, and I just, what else is there? What else is there? What else is there? And I went down the rabbit hole, and I've never looked back.
So I'm going to go out on a limb and cast it for a chat at a time machine. He would travel back to that moment and keep his mouth shut.
I've actually asked him this multiple times. Like, do you regret? So for you guys who don't know, my husband does play games with me very frequently, but it's not on the top of the list of things he would like to do. So I have asked him, like, do you regret the day that you introduced me to board games? And he's, no, absolutely not, because it brings me so much happiness and I'm super passionate about it. So, yeah.
Aww.
The loving husband that he is. So the right answer.
Who's probably just BSing
yeah,
you, right?
He's just like, oh my God, I wish I could go back.
Yeah. He's probably listening to this. One of those people listening to this and being like, Sean is right.
Head, yeah.
Sean's right.
Okay. Sean, I have a very important question for you.
Yeah. Is it the exact same question
yes,
I just asked
is.
You? Original.
Yes. What game got you into the hobby?
That would be Dominion.
Dominion, really?
Yes. Which, when I think about it, is a kind of a progression, I guess, because I used to be a pretty big Magic player when I was younger.
Hmm.
Stopped playing that when I kind of realized, when I had to actually buy stuff for it. And my parents weren't buying me stuff for it. So once I reached like 17 or 18, it's like, nope, this is too expensive. and then I used to play poker pretty competitively.
Oh, okay.
When I was probably about 7 or 8 years ago, I was pretty big into playing poker online and in person. And yeah, doing that. And then kind of again, as kind of life took off and I started doing my master's, I was like, didn't really have time to play poker until 4 a.m. every night. So there's definitely a card. Even when I was a kid, I remember playing, like, Crazy Eights with my dad and Blackjack when I was, like, 7 and stuff, right? So it was definitely a card thing for me. About 4 years ago, a coworker of mine, John, hi, John, you're probably listening to this and you know me since I already told you.
Hi,
you should,
John.
Yeah, there you go. That's exactly what he sounds like, too.
Oh, yeah?
Told me about this game and brought this game. I don't know, somehow I was telling him that I used to be a Magic player. Hmm. And he's like, oh, I have this game Dominion in here. It's like, it's very much like Magic and blah, blah, blah. Except you just buy the box and you play it. Then you don't have to go buy more cards,
right.
Which was probably not right given the millions of expansions for Dominion. But he brought it to work and we played at lunch one day and I was totally hooked. I was obsessed with Dominion.
Yeah.
I went out, I bought the Dominion big box. I've never gotten an expansion for Dominion and I've probably played Dominion like well into the triple digits.
Wow.
Times. I love Dominion. Is my still my favorite game.
Yeah?
Still my number one game. I'll never turn it, even base Dominion, I'll never turn down a game.
Really?
And I can just play it all day, all afternoon, forever.
I cannot say that same about Pandemic.
Yeah, no way.
Yeah. I still enjoy the game, but I'm pretty burnt out on it. I play it to get people into the hobby.
Yeah.
And I've had a lot of success with it, actually. Yeah.
Okay, Michelle. I have another question for you.
Yes,
This particular question pertains to... I'm just scrolling down because I screwed up here. This particular question pertains to how long you've been in the hobby.
So I think I've been in the hobby since 2013. So about 4 years. Seriously, like you, I mean, I played games all the time growing up, a ton with my family, on my own, making up games. Always loved games. But seriously into the hobby, like I discovered Pandemic. It was a warm evening. No. in 2013. What about you?
Probably the same. Like 3 or 4 years. I feel like when we first met.
Yeah, that was my first Fall Con.
It was mine too. So for those of you who aren't local, Fall Con is our local gaming convention, which is a pretty awesome convention for a local.
It is. It's great.
Gaming convention. How long had you been?
Almost a year.
Okay. So I feel like you're maybe 6 months more than me because I feel like I was starting to get really into it.
Then.
I don't even remember how I even found out about Fall Con. I'm not even sure.
I don't know either.
But yeah, that was kind of, I think, when we first met. And that was, I think you're probably 6 months ahead of me.
Okay.
On the scale.
Interesting.
All right. So in case, hopefully people have been paying attention.
Mm-hmm.
In case they weren't paying attention, what type of gamer are you, Michelle?
I mean, I would probably classify myself, I think my wheelhouse is middleweight Euros, but I play almost anything. I enjoy a lot of games. I don't really enjoy Dudes on a Map. That's pretty much the only genre I could say no to. I've never played a role-playing game, but I would be interested to try. But yeah, I mostly play middleweight Euros and some dungeon crawlers, mostly with my husband, because that's definitely what he prefers. And then just kind of everything in between. Yeah. What about you? Oh, I love cards.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And bits.
I love bits so much. Yeah.
Very similar, I think, to you, which is... Yeah, very similar in that I will play anything. I will rarely turn. There are very few games that I'll, turn down. The only time I'll ever turn down a given game is if, I'm, super tired or feel like I can't play a heavy game or whatever. That's the only time. I'm very much into bits. I do a little bit more than you, more social deduction, that type of games, and word games. I love word games. I am a speech language pathologist, so that's words and literacy and that sort of thing is definitely a big interest of mine. So definitely that, definitely card games I will gravitate to, deck building games. I love deck building is my favorite genre. I also do Dudes on the Map game, as long as there are good area controls involved. Deck building is my favorite, and then close second is area control.
Okay.
Those types of games are usually what I'll gravitate to, but I like games of all different types and stuff. It's really more about the... Well, we'll get into this next, actually.
Yeah.
I was going to segue into the next one, but Michelle, why do you play games?
I play games for a lot of reasons. I started playing games really because I liked...
Sorry, I have 12% left on the computer, so let's maybe not give all the reasons, just give 3 to 5.
I like the way it makes me think. I love using my brain, I like to think, and I just like the way my brain works when I play games. Then as I got into the hobby, I really liked how it brought people together. I could play with my family, I could play with people I didn't know, I could play with my friends, and it was just a great way to get together with people. Enjoy each other's company. It breaks down barriers. And then lastly,
you can do as many as you want, by the way. Just
no, I will, but this is it. But I love bits. I guess I'm very tactile. Who knew? I love just the fact that you're moving bits around, and when things, you know, I'm a little OCD with organization, so I love that, you know, certain things have a spot and you're moving pieces around. I just love the tactile nature of games, and I really, really appreciate the art that goes into a game. I mean, they're pieces of art and they're gorgeous, and I really enjoy exploring them. Yeah. What about you?
Why do I play games? I don't know.
Wow, that's so deep.
Yeah, that's my answer. Really deep. No, I was trying to think of something funny to say when you asked me that. I just completely shut down. I'm not funny.
Remember, I'm the one winning this podcast.
Funny looking.
Yes, that's true.
Yeah. But why do I play games? I think first and foremost, it's definitely an escape for me. It's, you know, no matter how stressed I am with work or how I'm feeling or whatever, I feel like if I'm playing a game, I'm kind of just, I can shut down from that.
Totally.
Right? It's like people watch movies for that reason. People read books for that. People, whatever, do whatever for that. For me, it's playing games. That's my kind of escape, which we all need. I think number two definitely is also the social aspect of it. I really like doing social things, but especially as I get older, I'm like, I don't necessarily want to, you know, go somewhere or go to the bar or go here or go there. Yeah. I'd rather go somewhere and play games and get my social fix from that, because I am a very social person. I know a lot of people who play games tend to be somewhat introverted. Mm-hmm. I'm definitely an extrovert for the most part. But I love playing games, and I love the social aspect of it, which I was in the previous one, I was going to say, like, I love social deduction games. I love, you know, I love things like Werewolf or any game where a whole group of people or Two Rooms in the Boom, things like that, where there's a lot of people, even if it's people I don't know. Just, I love things like that. And number three, definitely, I think, like, the arts and bit thing for me is huge. My wife always tells me I definitely seem to have... She thinks I have a bit of a hoarding problem. I don't actually have a hoarding problem, but
says
I do.
Every addict.
I know, right? Totally. Yeah, 100%. I do like collecting things. So, like, I've always like collected, whether it be DVDs or whatever. Like, I like collecting Disney animation. I'm not collecting, but getting the Disney animation movies, right? Because I love the animation. I just love the art. Part of it is I have no artistic ability, so I like appreciating other people, what other people could do. Same thing for the bits, right? It's like, to me, that's a little mini sculpture. It's a little mini thing, which I have absolutely, I can't even sculpt something in Play-Doh. So for me, it's like that whole, like, this is amazing and really appreciating, because I know I can never do anything like that.
So. Very nice.
Yeah. All right, so here's an important question. Why are we doing this fake radio? I like to call it podcasting. Yes. This fake radio / podcast show.
Because we love games, we're passionate about games, and we like talking about games. Mm-hmm. And we like bits, all the bits.
We do really like bits.
Yeah.
I mean, there are a lot of podcasts out there.
There are.
I think we're both pretty avid listeners.
Yes.
To podcasts. I
would think so.
I drive, some days I'm on the road like 2 to 3 hours, so I'm driving a lot, so I need stuff to listen to or I will go crazy. So I and not just board game podcasts, I have my podcast feed is like 40 deep right now, so I listen to a lot of podcasts over the spectrum, not just board game, although a lot of board game ones. And I've always thought it's a great medium. It's awesome. At least personally, I grew up listening to baseball, which you have no idea, on the radio. I grew up listening to baseball on the radio, and it's always, radio's always been super important in my life. Radio's not really a thing anymore these days. Like, you know, talk radio, unless you listen to NPR, which I listen to NPR podcasts.
Yeah.
So to me, like, radio's always played like a huge part of my life. Like, it's always been something. So I just thought this, yeah, at least from my own perspective, it'd be awesome to be able to do something. And the great thing about podcasts is anyone can do it because you're listening to this.
That's right. And you drug me along for the ride.
I did, yes. I didn't pressure you, but I feel like we talk about games all the time anyway.
It's true.
I have to clear my text messages sometimes because there's so many texts back and forth between games. So I feel like we do it, so why not just talk about it?
Record it.
Anyway, and record it. And hopefully, of the 5 people listening, one will be entertained.
Perhaps.
Yeah.
Perhaps. Yeah.
Anything else?
I don't think so, no.
No. Thank you for joining us for our first episode of All the Bits. We hope you enjoyed it and had a great time. We had a great time doing it.
Yes, we did.
And don't forget to play all the games and touch all the bits.
Bye.
Get your fill of bits on our Twitter account, @allthebitspod. You can also get in touch with us at our email address, which is allthebitspodcast@gmail.com.